Wow. This is something. Thank you, everyone. I am Amy Klobuchar, the senator from Minnesota, where we can see, Iowa from our porch. And now there are some comparisons made between the Minnesota and Iowa state fairs. I'm not going to say which one is better, but I will say this. I am very much looking forward to your butter cow, Iowa. We'll see how it compares to our Princess Kay of the Milky Way and the revolving refrigerator of the 12 butter busts of the princesses. I once asked one of the dairy princesses what she does with her butter carving when she's out of the fair. And she says that she brings it home and they use it in the corn fest. Okay? That's an image. All right, so I have been all around Iowa the last few days on a 20-county tour. And let's just say it's a little warmer than it was when I announced my candidacy in the middle of that blizzard. But I thought that would be good to show that I have grit and ended up with 4 inches of snow on my head and the hairdresser became an icon. But I announced my candidacy there because I wanted to make the point on the Mississippi River that it is time to cross the river of our divides in our politics and get to a higher plane. And as I stood outside of Ankeny in front of a barn with a flag draped on that barn a few days ago, I thought to myself, that is the same flag that's flying over El Paso. That is the same flag that is flying over Dayton. Because what unites America is so much stronger than what divides us. No matter what this president says or what he tweets, we all know that truth. And no, Mr. President, after Charlottesville, there wasn't two sides when the other side is the Ku Klux Klan and white supremacists. There is only one side, and that is the American side. And when I have been out there in the small towns, I have been really surprised, not just Democrats, and at this very fair, but people have come up, regular people, have come up to me and started talking about gun safety. And I think it is very important that we have these discussions in places like Iowa. Because I am the one that sat across from the President of the United States in the White House after Parkland. I sat there because I have been a leader on gun safety, yet coming from a big hunting state. And when I look at these proposals, I say to myself, do any of them hurt my Uncle Dick in the deer stand? They do not. These are proposals that make sense. And as I sat across from him, I watched. And I kept track. And 9 times he promised that he would get universal background checks done. And you know what he did instead? The next day he went and met with the NRA and he folded. When I am your president, I will not fold. All right? I will not fold because when I make promises, I keep them. I look people in the eye and tell them the truth. And as you've probably heard, I have won in the reddest of congressional districts. And I think it is pretty important, Iowa, to have a candidate from the Midwest, from the heartland right now. I do. And someone that just doesn't have a bunch of policies written down on a piece of paper, but has a track record of looking out for rural America. And let me talk about my economic agenda and what I think is important for this country because I think we need an optimistic economic agenda. First, I think that kids that grow up in rural America should be able to live in rural America. I think that we need to bridge this divide between rural and urban and make sure that people that live in metropolitan areas understand that food just doesn't magically show up on their table, right? And understand that we need strong farm policies and we don't need a president that is treating our rural areas and our farmers like they're a bunch of poker chips in one of his bankrupt casinos. Because that's what's happening right now. And as your president, I will not let that happen. This means standing up to the big oil companies when it comes to climate change, and it also means standing up to the big oil companies so you don't grant them a bunch of waivers from the renewable fuel standard behind closed doors. I'm just not saying this right now at the Iowa State Fair. I have been leading on this issue since this guy got in office. And speaking of climate change, we have to make the argument that it is also an economic issue for this country when we've seen a 50% increase in the cost of home insurance. That's a pretty basic Minnesota, Iowa, Midwestern argument that we can make. It's going to cost people money if we don't do something about it right now. I stood there with Fran in Pacific Junction and looked through her binoculars, and she showed me her house. She said, my husband and I bought this house with our four-year-olds. We are going to retire in this house. And I love the kitchen. I love the way the light comes into the windows. But now that whole kitchen is submerged in water. She said, this house has stood here for nearly a century, and there is still horsehair in the plaster. And I said to her, well, it's a river right here, because there was raging water coming by. She said, no, 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 that's the road. She said, the river is 2.5 miles away, and it's never come this close before. Climate change is not happening in 100 years. It is happening right now. And we can do. We've got the answers right here. There is so much we can do. We can sign ourselves back into the International Climate Change Agreement. I'll do that on day one. We can bring back the clean power standards and the gas mileage standards. We can do a lot with soil and conservation. We put a pilot program right in the farm bill that's going to be helpful for all of Iowa. And the last time I checked, Iowa believed in science, or you wouldn't have given us Norman Borlaug, right? Norman Borlaug, who believed in science enough to feed the world and to stop 1 billion people from dying of hunger. That's what started in this state. And when it comes to health care, we have to bring those prices down. And by the way, when I'm president, I'll do everything I can to work with you to stop the privatization of Medicaid that's happened in this state. That is wrong. That is wrong. Mental health. No one is talking about this issue, yet in your state, there are only 64 public mental health beds in the state of Iowa. I am talking about it because it's what I hear firsthand from you all the time. Addiction, mental health, infrastructure, putting a president in place that's going to have an optimistic economic agenda, that's going to take on these issues and get them done. Now, we cannot do any of this if we can't win. And part of what I have tried to do in the debates, and I know maybe I haven't had a viral moment, all right? But what I have tried to do is to not take it to the other Democrats. We're going to have policy disagreements, and part of what you guys got to do, and I know no one does this better than Iowa, is vet the candidates and not go for the richest candidate and not go for the candidate from the biggest state or the one that has the biggest pot of money. What you have done is you vetted candidates that were unknown before, and then they came to Iowa, and you have decided and helped the country decide who are the best candidates to move forward, and I'm asking you to do that again. My track record is of getting things done. I have passed over 100 bills where I am the lead Democrat. I think that that matters. Getting things done matters. I have won every place, every race, every time. I won every race back to elementary school, where my slogan, which, okay, I've abandoned, was all the way with Amy Kay. All right, we're not going to use that one. Maybe that'll give me the viral moment, though, all right? But I think we should be using those debates because we know, you know, especially in this state, that there are moderate Republicans and independents watching those debates, right? They are, and they're thinking they're kind of tired of Donald Trump. They don't like a president where every time they turn on the TV and their kids are watching, they got to turn it off because they don't know what words are going to come out of his mouth. They want a different kind of president, and they're watching those debates. So I think it is very important that we make the point there is so much more that unifies us that divides us, which I made earlier, but also that he has made a bunch of promises he hasn't kept. He promised on Fox News that he was going to bring pharmaceutical prices down so low it would make your head spin. Well, it makes your head spin when over 2,000 of them have gone up in double digits, right? I keep my promises, and I've been taking on pharma since I got to Washington. I lead the bill to unleash the power of 43 million seniors, that's a lot of seniors, to negotiate prices under Medicare and bring those prices down. I lead the bill with Senator Grassley previously, Senator McCain and I did this bill together. And this is a bill that says, let's bring in less expensive drugs from other countries like Canada. Why should our country, that has developed so many of these great pharmaceuticals, be paying twice as much as the country of Canada? And finally, let's stop pay for delay. You know what that is? The big pharma companies pay off the generics to keep their products off the market. They both win and we lose. So that is an economic agenda for this country. And finally, training our workforce for the jobs that are available tomorrow, not yesterday. This is also about immigration reform. And don't let anyone tell you that immigrants aren't an important part of our economy. Nearly everyone out there stands on the shoulders of immigrants. And we need workers in Iowa, in our factories, and we need them on our in our farms and in our fields and in our nursing home, in our hospital. I was at a vet's home just yesterday, and they were talking about the shortage of mental health professionals and how much they want to have people who have studied in med schools here and done well in Iowa who are from other countries be able to stay here. So my message to you is this. We need comprehensive immigration reform. We need to stop using immigrants as pawns. Immigrants don't diminish America. They are America. And that is the voice from the heartland. That is the voice from the heartland. And the last thing I want to say before I take a few questions is this. Change starts right here. Think of the presidential candidates that have come through on this stage and have gone on to do amazing things for our country. Jimmy Carter, no one knew who he was. Bill Clinton, Barack Obama, you have a big burden on your shoulders, but that's because you're used to it. You know what Iowa gave us? Iowa gave us the Granger movement, where you took on those big monopolies. It started here in the cornfields, all right? You did that, and we need to do that again. Iowa gave us, as I mentioned, Norman Borlaug, who fed the world. Iowa gave us Edna Griffin, that woman who went to Katz Drugstore and sat at the counter, and when they refused to serve her because she was black, she said, no, I'm not moving off of this counter. That's what you gave us. Iowa gave us these incredible candidates who are taking on the world and changing the House, and that would be Abby and Cindy and Rita and JD, who's gonna beat Steve King in that district. That is what you've given us. You have led the country. And you are leading again. But the guy in the White House now, he governs from fear, right? He makes people afraid. He says things on Twitter, and most of the time he doesn't follow through, but he makes people afraid. He is afraid himself. He is afraid of the NRA, and that's why he didn't put common sense gun legislation in place. He's afraid of science. I mean, when I announced in the middle of that blizzard, he actually tweeted out and said that, made fun of me for announcing in the middle of blizzard and talking about climate change, and he called me Snow Woman. I thought that was actually pretty good. So I tweeted back, Donald Trump, the science is on my side, and I'd like to see how your hair would fare in a blizzard. I actually think we need to use a little humor against this guy, all right? But he governs from fear. He's afraid of the science. He's afraid of the future. He's afraid about people having equal seats at the table and economic opportunity, so he goes after them. He is afraid of the working class having the same economic opportunity as the wealthy, so he passes that tax bill that added $1 trillion in debt, and set our country backward. He's afraid of women and our rights. He's afraid of that. And most of all, he's afraid of a woman in the White House. We are not afraid of that. So I ask you today, everyone gathered at this beautiful fair, I ask you to join us and join me at amyklobuchar.com. As I said, I don't come from a lot of money, nor does my husband. He grew up in a mobile home, 6 boys in a mobile home. So we don't come from that money. But what we do come from is a strong tradition of grassroots politics, of Tom Harkin and the guy who was his best friend in the Senate, Paul Wellstone, who we miss so much. And Paul always said, politics, including right here at places like this, politics is about one thing. It's about improving people's lives. And when you believe that, everything else melts away. So let's go out there and let's win this. And please join our effort. We're going to win this. AmyKlobuchar.com. Thank you, everyone. All right. Okay, questions right here. I have to pick someone in purple because, you know, the Vikings. Prince. Yeah. All right.
As you know, Alzheimer's affects everybody, including my own grandparents, someone in your family as well. At 19, I joined the 16 million Americans that are caregivers for people with Alzheimer's. So if you were elected, what would you do to tackle Alzheimer's as a public?
Okay, the question is about tackling Alzheimer's, and I'm actually quite shocked this hasn't come up in the debate. So ABC, who's doing the next debate, listen up. It's a good question for the nation to hear. You know why? By 2050, 14 million Americans are forecast to have Alzheimer's. 14 million. It is the most expensive disease in the country. And yet, we are not making the progress that I think that we should make. People come up, there are caregivers that are in the sandwich generation that are taking care of their kids and their parents at the same time. And I have my own experience with this. My dad is in a memory care unit. And I've seen those incredible caretakers that are there for him all the time. But it's really hard for people, especially those taking care of people at home. As someone is there physically, but month by month and month, they're farther away with their minds. So the solution? Well, the solution is to put the money and the funding into research, to make sure that we are looking at prevention as well as treatment. We're getting all kinds of new information all the time. And the solution is making sure that we have long-term care that works for people. So let me give you one idea, and that is this. Whether people have Alzheimer's or not, they're worried about long-term care. So we've got to keep Medicaid strong, and this is because we're seeing a doubling of our senior population, which is great. The other day I called it the silver tsunami. People said that was too mean, so I'm calling it the silver surge. So we're seeing a doubling of that population, so we need to make it easier for people to get long-term care insurance and also long-term care and also keep Medicaid strong in the end. And a lot of families know what I'm talking about here. So here's my proposal. Wealthy people set up things called trust funds for their kids. So why don't we take ones that are over $500,000? That's a lot. Right now, they don't get taxed when they make money, if you can imagine, okay? If you tax those for when they make money, it's called appreciation, when you tax that part of it, you literally bring in hundreds of billions of dollars. Why don't we use that money to pay for long-term care, to put incentives in place to buy long-term care insurance and make it less expensive and help our seniors? Okay, next. Right here.
Hi, Amy. I have quite a few elections ahead of me in my life. After what happened in Georgia, I'm a little worried. I'm wondering what you would do when you're president to protect the right to vote.
Okay, the right to vote and democracy. This is a good way to end. This is fundamental to everything that you're hearing if you come to this soapbox today, right? People have to have the right to vote. That's what our founding fathers fought for, because they wanted to be independent from a foreign country. So this means to me making it easier, not harder, for people to vote. This isn't a Democratic issue with a big D. It's a small D issue. It's for everyone, independents, Republicans. I would make sure my bill passes that registers every kid who's eligible to vote when they turn 18, right? So you stop messing around with all this stuff. I would make sure that we reauthorize the Voting Rights Act and we stop this senseless gerrymandering. But mostly right now, and Iowa, you should be aware of this right now, we need to protect our right to vote from foreign countries. I have the bipartisan bill that says we should have backup paper ballots in the states that don't have them. And you know who stopped that? The White House gut-punched me. They called, the White House counsel called and stopped that bill from going to the floor, as did Mitch McConnell. Well, guess what? They're getting a lot of grief right now, all right? So I need you to put up the heat, and it's hot enough here to continue that grief. And let me end with this, with our democracy. Our march started the day after that inauguration when millions of people, including in this town, peacefully marched across the country. Then, the next day, 6,000 women signed up to run for office. We are on this march together. Then on day 9, with that mean-spirited Muslim order that came out, guess what? People spontaneously showed up at the airports to protest. Then on day 100, my favorite march, the March for Science, my favorite sign, what do we want science? When do we want it after peer review? Then we get into the summer where the Fighting 48 Democrats stood up against their effort to repeal the Affordable Care Act and kick people off their insurance, and we won, all right? Then you go for those incredible victories. My favorite one, a guy in New Jersey who said that he wanted the women to be home in time to make dinner the day of the Women's March. He ended up losing to an African-American woman. And then we end in 2018, but we don't end. 2018, we take back the House of Representatives thanks to Iowa, turn it into the People's House. We gotta win in 2020. Keep marching, join us. Thank you, stay fair.